Hi, this is Jason O'Dell, and welcome to Nikonian's Behind the Lens podcast series. I'm joined today by Mr. Rich Clarkson, who's been a photographer for the last 50 years, shooting incredible sporting events like the NCAA Final Four, the Olympic Games, anything sports photography related. And I've been participating this week in his sports photography workshop here in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Rich, thanks for joining me today.
Nice to be here.
So, obviously we'll talk about this workshop, but let's talk about your experience as a photographer. And you've had a wonderful history of being a photographer. It seems like a wonderful experience. A lot of people that you've met down the road. When did you get started? When did you first pick up a camera and say, this is really fun, this is what I want to do?
Oh, I started out using my mother's box camera in grade school.
Wow.
And then when I got to high school, then that was when I started doing pictures for the school newspaper and the annual, and then it went from there.
Incredible. And so we saw a neat little video. You got your first sports photography job in college, right? You were at the University of Kansas, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And you were able to document the basketball season.
Yeah, I was always interested in basketball. I couldn't play it very well, but I enjoyed photographing, and that was kind of a major sport at the University of Kansas at the time. So I began photographing that when I was in high school, and then my freshman year in KU, the team went to the national championships and won them. And that was an interesting time because the legendary Fog Allen, the coach, took me along with the team on the trips. So I got to go to my first Final Four that year, and we won, which made it even doubly good.
And I can imagine, as a college student, I mean, that must have just been an incredibly fun experience in general.
Yeah, it was very much. And it was one of those things that at the time I was freelancing, trying to sell as many pictures as I could. And at KU basketball games, I would do the pictures for the Kansas City Star, the Topeka Daily Capital, the Associated Press, and the predecessor to UPI then, which was Acme Telephoto.
Wow.
And I'd send a different picture or pictures to each of those outlets. And in those days, you couldn't transmit pictures, really, until you got to one of their major offices. So I would quick rush home, develop the film, make the prints, and put them on the bus to Kansas City and the bus to Topeka.
And 51 Final Fours later, you're still enjoying shooting basketball, right?
Yep, still enjoy it.
Excellent. What was the best Final Four game that you covered, or is there one that stuck out in your mind as being...
There's been so many good games and so many interesting games, and the one that took on a different kind of historic proportion was the 1966 game, in which the all-black team from Texas El Paso defeated the all-white team from the University of Kentucky, which then was made into Glory Road, the movie, which came out earlier this year. And that's been kind of neat because they had a team reunion down in El Paso, and they brought me back for the team reunion.
Oh, that's amazing.
And we had an exhibition of the pictures from that game there, and we also did an exhibition in the NCAA headquarters in Indianapolis. Jerry Bruckheimer ended up using a portfolio of my pictures in the trailer to the movie.
That's incredible.
So it was really nice to go to the reunion, and Jerry Bruckheimer was there. So we sat around. I suggested, three or four new television series he could do.
Now, I mean, you've seen the total evolution of equipment. We always talk a little bit about equipment on Nikonians. I know you use Nikon gear now, but I mean, I assume you're starting with your pinhole camera and box camera. You were using Speed Graphics back in those days.
Yeah. And my first professional camera was a Bush Pressman, 2.25 by 3.25. And then I went up to the 4x5 Speed Graphic. And at that point, in order to get some sequence pictures, I ended up buying a World War II Leica, which was made for the Luftwaffe, had a motor drive on the bottom, could shoot 2 frames a second. That is, if you wound up the spring-driven motor on the bottom
right,
far enough, you could get several frames out of it. And from that point, then I got my first Nikon, which was a Nikon S2, a rangefinder camera.
Mm-hmm.
and I bought it new, and then along came the Nikon SP with a motor drive, that's the first real electric-driven motor drive I had. It came with an accessory battery pack, which had 8 C cells in it, which drove the battery, and you'd put that over your shoulder. And I photographed a lot of early day basketball games when I first began doing work for Sports Illustrated with that camera and that motor drive.
That's really neat. Sticking with basketball for a little bit, a lot of the Nikonians members, they go out and they shoot their local high school games, and they're always looking for ways to improve what they can do, you know, like glean some tips from the masters, so to speak. Obviously, not everybody's going to be able to strobe a game. Although it's certainly, as I've learned from the workshop this week, that's a great way to go if you can get away with it. If you could give one or two nuggets of wisdom to aspiring basketball photographers for ways to improve, just things to think about for the next time they go out on a shoot, what would it be? What should they do?
Well, trying to know the game well enough to recognize what's going on, and also try to figure out what's going to make some of the most interesting angles in which the background works for you, that it's not distracting. And that's really kind of a key element. And the traditional place from which most basketball games are shot is on the baseline, under the basket, kind of out to the edge of the court. But in fact, and we looked this week at a lot of pictures that were taken from different places, from seats up in the stands and from a variety of angles. So if you have a telephoto lens available, that's a very good technique, and the advantage of all of that is if you can go a little high, you end up getting good action pictures with the background, essentially the court itself. So it's a nice, clean background. There's not kind of a junky thing in the background that is fighting counter to the content of what mm-hmm. you're trying to do with a player dunking or driving a baseline or shooting a three. That's one of the kind of the first things that we kind of talk about in doing basketball, mm-hmm. to make sure that there's no distracting elements in the picture.
Excellent. That sounds like good advice for all kinds of photography, as not just basketball.
Right.
What was the most fun you had on a shoot?
Oh, gee. I've had so many that were a lot of fun that it would be...
Anything that like sticks out in your mind, you came back from that because of the images that you got, or even not because of the images. Maybe it was just a great experience that you came home and...
Well, I've done a bunch of Olympics, but the most interesting Olympic that I did was the one in Moscow, which the Americans were boycotting thanks to Jimmy Carter, who thought that was how we were going to get the Russians out of Afghanistan.
That's true.
Didn't seem to work out quite that way. So I was there with a very small American press corps. I was there with, there were three of us who was photographing for Sports Illustrated, they had only two riders, so it wasn't a large crew, but the rest of the world was there. Mm-hmm. And it was at the time that the Cold War was still raging, and that was pretty interesting too, because they gave us a driver to drive us around all the time, and of course he was, though we knew it and he knew that we knew it, and no one said anything about it. He was a KGB agent watching us just to make sure that we were all okay. And it was pretty interesting, but what I enjoyed about that so much was that I ended up getting a couple of covers out of it, and the last week a lot of pictures just went right for me. I was just kind of at the right place at the right time. And then
kind of in that zone, huh?
Yep. Got a lot in the magazine that week, so that was fun, and I enjoyed it, and it was... I'd been to Moscow a couple of times previously to that, including the summer before for the Spartakiad, which is the Soviet national sports show, which they did at all the Olympic venues on an Olympic schedule the year before. So I had a very good idea of where we were going and what we were doing and how it was all going to run the next year at the Olympics. So it's really nice to be well prepared when you get to a place for the Olympics.
So you were able to pre-visualize the year before, practically.
Right. And the neat thing about all of that was that while the Russians were very concerned at the height of the Cold War, because the Americans were boycotting the American team and mm-hmm. our president was boycotting, they went out of their way to make the handful of us from the American Press Corps feel right at home and to treat us really, really well. And it was probably, I've never been treated better at an Olympics than by the host country than in all places in the Soviet Union at the height of the Cold War.
Impressive. That's cool. Tell me a little bit. You work for National Geographic. That's correct, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
And tell me a little bit about your experience, because that's one of the magazines that, I mean, I have a subscription. A lot of our members just aspire to someday, I want to shoot for National Geographic. We've heard that a million times, yeah. But it's true. It's a wonderful magazine with wonderful images. What was your experience with them?
I was director of photography for 3.5 years there, which meant I was in the office all the time. I never travel. I sent all the other photographers to exotic, wonderful places where they had all the fun, and then I would look at the expense accounts to see how much fun they really had. In the meantime, I was in the office and in meetings all the time, and it was an administrative job, and it was interesting. It was a lot of fun, and it was at a time when the Geographic had all the resources in the world, and we didn't have a budget, so we spent whatever was necessary to get things done. Today, the whole world is different, and everyone has budgets, including there's budgets for National Geographic stories, and they try to stick to the budget, but it has not really hurt the way they go about doing things, and they have adequate money to do any story that they're doing and to do it really well. It's just that they've kind of tightened up some areas that used to be a little wasteful. So today, they use the money efficiently, but they have plenty to do whatever they're doing really well.
Now, how would you guys pick a photographer for assignment? Did you get submissions all the time from photographers, or did you have people on your short list that you already knew or working for?
When I was there, we had 12 photographers on staff, and we had another 6 on contract. But then we also had the luxury, which they still do and do today, the luxury of hiring any freelance photographer, really, who could be a specialist or, because of their style and techniques, would be most appropriate for X kind of story. And so it always worked out reasonably well. And it was just a matter of matching the story with the photographer who's probably going to do it best.
Excellent. Well, I know that that's certainly one of those aspirations that a lot of us have, is someday seeing their work gracing the cover of National Geographic magazine. Now, we're here in Colorado Springs, at your workshop that you organize every year. It's called the Sports Photography Workshop, correct?
That's one of them, right.
And you have another photography at the summit, which correct. Is a landscape and wildlife outdoor
and
photography.
And a lot of, this workshop in sports really started initially using nothing but Sports Illustrated photographers and editors. So for a number of years, that was everyone we used came from Sports Illustrated. And then in recent years, we've started adding other people to faculty because so many other photographers are doing really neat things in the world of sport that we can kind of draw from lots of different experiences. Photography at the Summit started out all National Geographic photographers, and then we have added other people to it. And we try to make sure we have at least 8 on the faculty every year for that workshop. And 2 or 3 will be picture editors, and then the rest will be photographers coming from different specialties. But we always have some pretty hardcore photojournalists in that group, as well as nature, wildlife, and landscape photographers. And this next fall, we'll have Marianne Golan, who's the picture editor of Time magazine, which does one kind of pictures. And then we'll have Chris Johns from the National Geographic magazine, who is now editor-in-chief of the National Geographic magazine. And as I try to explain to people here at the sports workshop and at that one, it's the greatest place for networking. You would never be able to get more than a handful of minutes with any of those top picture editors in their office in New York or Washington, and you might not even be able to get in at all. At the workshop, you got them for a whole week, and at the end of the program each night, you can go out and buy them a drink and really get to know them.
And as I learned, you get their business card and their email address in a lot of cases.
That's it. And it's amazing how many people have come up with major assignments, with book contracts, with all kinds of things, by the end of a workshop.
And now this year, your faculty, let's run down the list. We did a podcast interview earlier last year with Dave Black. He's one of the faculty.
Right.
And who else do we have? I know Joey Terrell.
Joey is a wonderful illustrative photographer from Los Angeles who does all kinds of corporate work, but he does a lot of editorial work for Sports Illustrated and Golf World and Golf Digest. And in the people we had here this week as editors, we had Matt Ganella, who is the director of photography at Golf World and Golf Digest. Every year he's been here, he has discovered a new photographer to use. And 2 years ago, he latched on to one here that is now covering 19 major tournaments for him this year.
Wow.
And then we also had here Porter Binks, who's one of the picture editors at Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. We had for one afternoon Steve Fine, who's the director of photography at SI, was here for an afternoon. And so there again, it's a matter of trying to hook up people who come to the workshops with users eventually of their pictures if they're good enough.
Now, another wonderful thing about this week, I mean, I've been a participant in this workshop. It's been incredibly fun for me because we get access, we get a photo credential to shoot locally here at the U.S. Olympic Training Center, plus anywhere else around town you might want to go.
Right.
The first step, I think, of sports photography is getting that access. You talked about that in some of your presentations, and you get that here. You can go and you can shoot with these athletes, and you don't have to worry that you're sneaking in behind enemy lines or something like that to do it.
Right.
And then every morning we've had a photo critique with this wonderful staff of editors and photo editors and photographers. And I know just from my own experience here, I mean, I started on day one submitting things and hoping that no one would laugh at them, to today, Friday, having three images that were pretty well received by the staff. I've improved and grown that much in just 5 days. So it's really an excellent opportunity for anyone who's trying to get into sports photography. If our members want to look this up on the web, what's the website that they should go to find that?
They could go to any one of a variety of places, sportsphotographyworkshop.com. or photographyatthesummit.com, or our main website, richclarkson.com.
Okay, so three different ways to get there. Excellent, because I think there's going to be a lot of interest in people coming next year, and hopefully, I met some people here who have been here for multiple workshops, they keep coming back, so
right.
It must be a good thing. And another good reason to come to this workshop and sort of why I'm here talking to you is that this is partially sponsored by Nikon. This is one of your big sponsors. And Nikon has been on site all week, Nikon Professional Services, loaning out gear. Whatever you need, they've been able to give it to us. And for me, as a Nikon shooter, and I know you are too, at least some of the time, that's a wonderful luxury. Yesterday, I checked out a 200 f2.0 lens.
Right.
It's not something that you just go and casually buy at the store.
No.
And I was able to shoot
new
basketball.
Lens in the last year.
Right, and I shot basketball with it, and it was really fun. So you're still shooting Nikon, right? What's your favorite toy that you want? Anything that you just really have liked?
Well, my latest new toy is the D200, which I just love. I've got a D2X, and then one of the things in our office in Denver, we have... We do all the photography for the NCAA. We do all 88 of their national championships every year. And we do all the photography for the Colorado Rockies and the Denver Broncos. We do a lot of publishing for these places, too. We did a lot of exhibitions of photographs. And we do a variety of books every year. So it's a wide variety of things. And the neat thing about all of that is that Nikon keeps supplying us with their latest equipment.
That's a nice luxury.
Our photographers can be familiar with what's new, and that's really a wonderful luxury, because every time they come out with a new camera, we get some.
That's good.
Right?
You can't beat that deal. Let me ask you this. You've seen it all from, 4x5 to speed graphics to now you're shooting D2X and D200 digital cameras.
Right.
How has digital made what you do easier? How has it made what you do harder? Usually there's a plus and a minus to everything.
There's not much of a minus to it once you get on and get the workflow under control. We're doing in our office lots of images And at times, it's almost like the equivalent of a daily newspaper, at least a weekly magazine. And so the workflow and the storage and the archiving and all of that are all issues which we got into pretty early because while we were still shooting film for the NCAA and the other clients, we were digitizing everything. We were scanning and digitizing, mm-hmm. and the Nikon digital scanners today are just, they're amazing. I mean, they're the, you get the most for the money with almost any kind of scanner you could ever get. So at any rate, we were far into archiving digitally thousands of images and using them well. So when we begin using the digital cameras, which was essentially when they first came out at Nikon, mm-hmm. We were already pretty well into knowing how to handle it. The big advantage we have today is, of course, the quick access to the image, the ability to know what you got and that you got it or you didn't get it, so you can try to get it again. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of interesting because for the Final Four, as the NCAA photographers, we're the only ones that put remote cameras on the backboard. And we have four cameras remotely on the backboard, and we pool those images. They're available first to the Associated Press, and then Reuters, and then Sports Illustrated, and then everyone has access to them. And no one has to wait for them, because we use fiber optic cable right out of the camera, right back to the workroom where all of the photo editors are working. There must be 100 of them in this room. The camera goes off, and a split second later, it's on the screen of the Associated Press.
And 10 minutes later, it's on the front page of SI.com or something like that.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we had a picture from this year's Final Four that was on the ESPN website 8 minutes into the game.
I guess that's modern technology for you.
That's it.
That's incredible. Well, Rich, I want to thank you for spending a little bit of time out of your busy schedule to talk with me and bring your message out to Nikonians. I think there's a lot of people who'll be interested in this.
Good.
I've had a wonderful time this week. I can't thank you enough for putting on such a great workshop. Hopefully, I will see more of you, and hopefully you will get some submissions from some of our members.
That'll be fun.
Who knows? Maybe they'll start shooting assignments for you someday.
We welcome them.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
This has been a production of the Nikonians podcast series. Go behind the lens with Nikonians at podcasts.nikonians.org.